Welcome to Doha Debates. Each episode, we explore an urgent issue, present various sides on that issue, and try to see where, if at all, common ground can be found. We hope to bring you a conversation that's well-informed, spirited, but civil and respectful. Today, we're talking about violence and video games. I'm Karen Given, and for more than 20 years, I was a reporter, producer, and host for an NPR sports show. As part of that job, I would sometimes attend and report on major video game competitions, because yes, video games are a sport. In 2018, researchers from Dartmouth University published an analysis looking into studies that followed 17,000 gamers from all over the world. According to Dartmouth, those studies suggested that there's a link between violence in video games and increased physical aggression over time in children and teens. But violence isn't the only question video games raise. Researchers have also suggested a link between video games and sexist attitudes, citing as a problem everything from the over-sexualization of characters in fighting games like Dead or Alive or Ninja Gaiden, to the overuse of the damsel in distress trope in the Super Mario series. And this connection to violence against women isn't limited to the West. Studies have shown that it's happening in the global South as well. On the other side of the debate are those who believe that video games should be protected as a form of art. Games create immersive worlds and complex storylines that can rival a really good movie or an in-depth TV series. If you, like me, are among the 40 million Americans who have watched at least one episode of HBO's The Last of Us, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So where should we draw the line? Where does the right to protect children from potentially harmful imagery infringe on the right of designers and storytellers? Is it fair to draw a direct connection between video game violence and actual violence? To help us answer those questions, I'd like to welcome Bahia Khan, a multiple award-winning game designer, writer, and filmmaker. She is most notably known for her IGF-winning game, After Hours, which is a full-motion video game about a young woman that was molested as a child and suffers from borderline personality disorder as a result. She makes games to tell marginalized people's stories, and she really only cares if teenage girls like her work. Welcome, Bahia.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I'd also like to welcome Josh Firm. Josh calls himself a presenter with a focus on the psychological. He has a master's degree in psychological research methods and has specialized in the field of decision making. He is a libertarian who advocates for limited government, free trade, and social conservatism. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, Bahia, you are representing the point of view that says that there is a problem with video games today. Make your case.
Well, I mean, I think it's not just limited to video games, firstly. I think that because video games is such a young medium, it gets a lot more flack, I think unfairly so. But I definitely do think there is a problem specific to video games. For instance, if you're playing like an online game and if somebody hears that there's actually a female voice speaking, then often they have certain ideas about the person behind the voice. You know, women or femme-sounding people often do get called a lot of different slurs. Sometimes if they assume your race, you also get called different slurs, right? I often think that the way that women are shown in fighting games, it's more about how to appeal to the male gaze as opposed to, like, is the armor that they're wearing actually protective?
All right, Josh, you are representing the side that says video games are fine the way they are. Make your case.
So I think that video games are an art form, and I don't think that there should be any limits placed on art. And in many ways, you could argue that there's lots of violence in video games, and there are many different reasons for that, and yet people don't make the same arguments when it comes to, say, the news, even though that's real and it's not a video game. I think, actually, if you portray violence realistically, a normal person should react with horror. It's not something that is tasteful to someone who wants to do good in the world. And I think, actually, exposing people to difficult things helps them to form attitudes that help them in the real world. And particularly with a video game, you are in an environment where there's very limited harm. You know, you're just the person playing it. you can't really do any real world harm, but yet you can explore the ideas that are represented in the video game and approach the real world with perhaps more wisdom than you could have otherwise.
Bahia, where do you think Josh has gone wrong in his thinking?
I think for the most part of, like, you know, the fact that it's art and people should be allowed to do whatever they want, I do agree, but to an extent, you know, not when it starts becoming irresponsible. And I feel like if you are designing a game that is irresponsible, or knowing, for instance, that your fan base are largely male, and not to kind of stereotype, but a lot of the time male gamers sometimes have like social anxiety, or they don't get out that much. So that the only kind of interaction that they do have are in this world that's so insular. And I think if you're only interacting with something like that, it can be really damaging if the stuff that's being purported to you are showing graphic violence against women, or just graphic violence in general. And the thing about the news is, like, obviously it's real world events, right? And it's horrible. But I think that a video game isn't necessarily going to be the place that teaches you how to deal with a violent situation in real life. Because I think, Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, but you said something of it doesn't have consequences outside of the space.
That is effectively my argument, yes.
Yeah, so I also don't agree with that, because I definitely think that it does, but not just video games. I think any sort of media that you do consume, it doesn't just stop the minute you stop interacting with it. You kind of carry those feelings with you. I mean, for instance, we had a case in South Africa a few years ago. Thankfully, we don't have really like school shootings and stuff like that here, but we did have a child take a samurai sword to school, and he wore one of the like Slipknot masks. Multiple people got injured, and people were blaming Slipknot for it. And I think that, like, people obviously do make the decision to harm somebody else, but you need to be watching what's your child consuming. So I think that, like, everybody does have a responsibility to each other in a way. I mean, obviously you should include content warning. Sometimes if you do have difficult things in your games, that should be, I think, said in the beginning. But I also think it's important not to just have like violence for violence sake. Or a lot of the time I feel like people who do consume a lot of graphic video games do become desensitized. And I think that sometimes when you are only in such an insular environment, like just existing online, you forget that actually your actions exist outside of an online space. And things that might necessarily be okay in the space would not be okay at all in the real world.
Josh, why don't you respond?
That gives me quite a lot to go off of.
It does.
First and foremost, let's start with the stuff I agree with. So I certainly agree that it's parents' responsibility. That's obviously true. I mean, parents should be responsible for pretty much monitoring everything that their children are consuming. I know we have things like age guides for certain games, and it lists what kind of content that might be questionable is in the game, so that parents can make an informed decision. And I think that that should be enough. And I think something else that I think is worth bringing up is that I've played many, many violent video games. I think they're great fun, because you might get immersed in it, but you never truly feel like it's you doing it. It's a bit of fun, and it doesn't feel as you might if you witness real-world violence. I think that the two are so far apart from one another, there is this lack of a suspension of disbelief, because they're not photorealistic. You know it's a game. And there is a question of some of the research that's linked video game violence and real-world violence. They haven't necessarily controlled for the fact that, well, maybe those individuals were already predisposed to being violent in the first place, and it just so happened that they are drawn to violent video games. When in fact, I would turn it around and say there are many, many positive things that video games can do. Telling compelling stories that tell you things about the world. And I think ultimately, video games as an art form shouldn't necessarily tell people the stories they want to hear. They should tell them ones that are difficult, that actually make them stop and think. And those are always my favourite experiences, the ones that I seek out in playing video games. Those quite often are the most compelling. We might see those ones succeeding, which I think we do.
Well, on the other hand, regardless of whether the research can prove a widespread link that applies to the entire video game playing population, there's plenty of anecdotal evidence, like the one, Bahia, that you brought into this conversation that suggests that violent video games have inspired individuals to commit violent acts. Bahia, is that something that you worry about?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's like a daily worry of mine. or even when I'm making games, because actually the games that I make do have a lot of elements of violence in it. But it's not violence in the sense of, you know, you're going to go out and shoot a bunch of people because you're like defending your land. I also just want to say that I think like violence in video games, there's a lot of different forms of it, obviously, right? Like I was saying, I think there's violence present in the games that I make. But there's also violence where it's straight up racist. You know, you're kind of playing as like the white savior. I think there's a Resident Evil game where you are a white man who comes to a place in Africa, if I'm not mistaken. And there's a whole bunch of like black zombified people. And I think that like, I don't know if maybe if you are a white boy playing this game, you're killing a bunch of black people. How does that, even if you don't have a disposition to, like a predisposition to violence, just what does that say to you? Because violence doesn't always have to be physical, right? Like, how does that alter the way that you think? And if you are a person of color, then playing the game, killing a whole bunch of other people of color, again, what does that say? But also just like, what's wrong with the designers? Why are you doing that? But with regards to like violence in my games, so like the game After Hours that you mentioned in my little introduction, the violence present there is when we see the protagonist, we see that there are like self-harm scars on her arm. And obviously we know that there was a violent action that took place there. And then also she's been molested as a child. So there's violence there. And the way that she interacts with her body is also quite violent. And then in the game that I'm making currently, it's about this, it's about grief, right? And I think that grief can be a very violent emotion, actually. And I think, yeah, just like violence like that also needs to be approached with a lot of like caution and responsibility. And I learned that after making After Hours, because it was my first kind of like game. And I only after people played it did I realize the effect that it had on them, because they would be crying or sometimes they'd stop halfway through and be like, I can't do this. And then I started feeling like, where is the kind of aftercare available for somebody who plays this game? So yeah, I mean, I do think you can show violence in a video game, but you do have a responsibility towards the people who interact with it.
Welcome to Necessary Tomorrows. My name is Ursula. I am an AI, and I have inferred from your online activity that you have been feeling more dread than hope when you think about the future that is coming for us here in the 2060s. So I have created a course just for you to enhance your capacity for imagining different futures. Necessary Tomorrows, an audio series by Doha Debates and Al Jazeera. Find it where you listen to podcasts.
All right. Well, we have an audience of listeners who've been following along with this discussion and want to weigh in. Joining us now is Jana Mawa from Bangladesh. Jana, you've actually done quite a bit of research into this topic on your own. What's your question for our guests?
So before I pose my question, I just wanted to comment on a few things that the guests were saying. The first thing was, so I grew up, you know, in the height of the peak of the like really good games. So like, you know, the peak era of Call of Duty where, you know, we were shooting up and committing mass murder in like airports and stuff, right? And so as a result of that, I think even though I've experienced like sort of playing those violent games, and I'm not a violent person, but I love shooting games, right? It's so much fun. I would like to say that I turned out well, right? I'm not going around shooting people. So in that regard, I would say that violence, you know, in video games particularly aren't the problem. And, you know, obviously the issues of sexism and racism, particularly, again, I'm going to reference Call of Duty, you know, with storylines about Arabs and terrorists and stuff that mainly have the bad guys as the brown people. Even then, I think video games aren't necessarily the problem. problem is the social context in which, you know, video games are played. So, you know, in America, you see gun violence, and that's not necessarily the problem. You know, you get, it's always blamed on violent video games, but isn't it really more of the social context in which these violent video games exist, where there is no sort of law to prevent this kind of thing happening, where there is no necessary supervision when it comes to these violent video games? And I also absolutely agree with Josh about how, you know, video game is an art form, and that, you know, people should be able to express themselves, especially with the storylines. I think if you, it's almost like nudity, right? Like, it's a form of art, storytelling, but a lot of people don't agree with it, but it can still be a powerful tool when it comes to storytelling. And so my question was actually, why are we specifically talking about video games? Why is it when there is a school shooting or a violent, you know, incident, why is it always only video games that are blamed? Why is it not, you know, violent movies and TV shows?
Who wants to take it first?
I'm happy to. So I think part of it is that video games are largely associated with young people, and the majority of violence is committed by young people, so it's almost guilt by association. In fact, in Britain, I believe, it's the most popular form of media. It outsold film, TV, but lots of the violence depicted in Game of Thrones is probably far worse than the violence I've seen in video games, and far more horrifying as well, because you have an emotional attachment to the characters in question in Game of Thrones. That's why it's so shocking. Again, the depictions there don't make you feel like you want to emulate it. You want to stop it because you care about the people who are the victims of the violence in the TV show.
So I think the biggest difference with video games and other mediums is the fact that it's interactive. You actually play as the person, you make those decisions. You are actually doing the murdering. So it situates you in that kind of character. And like I said, it's completely different worlds. Video games are not real, firstly, and it happens in like a very insular environment. But I do think that if that's the only environment you are interacting with, or you do have agency over, that it can end up frustrating you in the real world. And you can feel sometimes like you don't know how to interact with certain things. But yeah, basically, I just wanted to say, I think the reason that they use video games kind of as a scapegoat a lot of the time is because it's a medium where you actually do have agency in.
I very much agree.
Look at that. Jenna, I see you wanting to say something, so go ahead.
Yeah, so I wanted to just ask about, well, it's not something that I personally agree with. It's not like my opinion, but many would say, like, you know, how you said that in video games, if you kill someone in a video game, which I have done, it's not, you know, it's assumed that you might kill someone in real life. But isn't that true also for, like, maybe if I write a story about, like, murder mystery, wouldn't I also be capable of doing the same? Because I'm creating these characters, I'm killing these characters. So again, if you're going off of the fact that a video game is an art form, right? So what would your opinion would be on that?
I think we all agree that, like, killing in a video game doesn't mean that you're going to kill outside of it. I think that's something everybody can agree on, right? And it's like Josh was saying, it's usually because you do have a predisposition to violence, and it could be video games, it could be a song that you listen to. I mean, God, people were also blaming back in the day My Chemical Romance for inciting people to commit suicide, you know, and that's, if anything, they're more like a haven for people who are going through something. So, I mean, I do think a lot of the time it's also just like people who don't understand whatever they're describing, whether it's Slipknot, My Chemical Romance, or a video game, and using them as a scapegoat. I think everything, honestly, is very, like, situational and specific. Who is this person? And it's difficult to do, like, actual scientific research into every person ever that's interacted with a video game and has behaved or not behaved a certain way because of it. But like I said, it goes back to the fact that I think the difference with video games is that you have a hand in the participation of violent acts.
All right. Well, we have another question from Alanud Alakidi, who joins us from Qatar. Alanud, what is your question?
Yeah, so from what I've both heard from Josh and Bahia is video games inherently aren't the number one cause to trigger violence in people. I feel like it's mostly there is an inherent foundation of a mental illness or disorder or something that can trigger violent rage, which can be a cause for violence. And one video game for that's used an example that actually studies people is Detroit Become Human. And essentially, it's a very decision-based story game where it tests someone's morals. So there's a neutral decision, there's an extremely violent decision, and there's an also like a more peaceful decision that you could make, and that entirely changes the course of the story. And after I finished playing the game developers actually showed a survey and statistics of how much percentage of people chose the violent option or the less violent option. And it's interesting because this game had been played by around 8 million people. So it really plays into the decision-making of so many people worldwide. And my question is, to what extent do you believe there is a possibility of developing video games, whether they're a completely new storyline or a sequel to a previous one, to change to help build more empathy as opposed to stimulating violence? And since it's very difficult to pose an age limit restriction on violent games, like anyone could easily fake their age to download a game.
So I think there's good news for you in that those sorts of games do already exist. And one I'm going to cite is particularly one that puts you in lots of moral quandaries is The Witcher 3, which of course was turned into the Netflix series. And that puts you in a very morally ambiguous world. And it actually gives you decisions that are meaningful to the narrative, so they matter, as well as the fact that they have unintended consequences and also a sort of morally grey morality. Sometimes you'll be picking the lesser of two evils, and it actually makes you have to sit down as a player and think about what you believe, what your morals are. And I think that that sort of thing does carry across, because it's rather than the technical skill that you develop in, say, a shooting game or a fighting game, where it's more about getting good at the game, what you're getting out of a narrative-driven game like that is an understanding of the world around you. Games like Call of Duty, which are very popular, people don't play them for their story. They don't necessarily play them because there's any compelling narratives. It's because the actual gameplay is fun. But there are stories out there, I've played many, that have been very compelling. Another one is the game God of War, which is like a father and son story, and it's a very wholesome thing where you see father and son get closer together, and it made me almost want to start a family sooner, which surely is a good thing, right? Like, I was just like, wow, actually, you know, I feel like I am going to be good at this, and it can be very good motivation for people to improve, because you are confronted with situations that most people should hopefully not have to come across in real life. And that's one of the major benefits, I think, is that it tells you something about yourself when you're playing a very good video game, in a way as well that other media doesn't necessarily reflect. You can watch a thought-provoking film or TV show, but you're not interacting with it in the same way, so it doesn't feel as personal. Whereas I think there's, with particularly the violent video games, there's not this sort of metacognition about how your morality is developing. It's just action where you've got to respond as quickly as possible. It's all about response times and building those, which have their own cognitive benefits as well, in that there are provable benefits in things like reaction time and visuospatial navigation, things like that. So even those have their benefits as long as they're approached in the right way.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with like everything Josh was saying, that those games do already exist. And there's so much wonderful things, I think, that come out of video games that often mainstream media don't shed a light on. For instance, like making British men want to start families, I guess. just the other thing that I did want to mention is I feel like sometimes it's not so much like violence that's the problem in a game. It's the community that forms as a result of the game, where like violent individuals maybe find a kind of echo chamber for beliefs and they bond over a video game, but it's not necessarily the content of the game. That's the problem. You know, it's just that maybe the game brought them together. And so they like can have a space online to like share very harmful ideologies.
So we're going to need to wrap up soon. But before I ask our final question, is there anything you heard today that challenged or maybe even changed your view on the topic? Maybe it's a perspective you hadn't considered before or something that just gave you pause?
I think it's nice to hear that I came into this expecting to get a lot of pushback, but it's nice that there can be agreement. I thought that I'm going to be browbeaten saying I'm defending violence and that I'm a terrible sexist and things like that, when actually I just want to take part in compelling stories that I see great value in. That was my main reason for engaging with video games in the first place.
I think for me, I just never maybe thought of violence as a way of almost making people less violent by giving them choices with regards to like moral quandaries and stuff, because I haven't really played games like that. Just hearing about these kinds of games and that they exist was really lovely and like interesting actually to hear.
Great. Let's move on to our very final question. Let's look ahead. Where do you see the future of all of this going? Are video games going to get more violent, more sexist, or are they going to go the other way, where we get to delve into these moral quandaries and learn things about the world and ourselves? Bahia, why don't you take it first?
I think a lot of marginalized people in video games are trying so hard to like kind of bulldoze a path for other marginalized developers. And I do see it happening in South Africa, at least, with a lot of like women of color that I know who are making stuff that aren't like necessarily, you know, oh, we need to reflect all of our trauma and like that kind of like poverty porn that I feel like a lot of people expect. And I think that's wonderful that people are doing that. And that also I feel like younger people are realizing more and more that we can do stuff that's outside of everything that makes our lives difficult. And we should. You know, we shouldn't be like bogged down to one specific thing. So I'm hopeful for the future of everything.
That's great. Josh, are you hopeful?
I wish I was as optimistic, but I think that in the ideal world, I would want everyone to have the freedom to make whatever games they want. If you don't like the state of games, then sure, go out and make ones that you're happy with. That's great. But don't try and limit what other people can do. And in an ideal society, you don't have one idea being communicated, you have lots of competing ones, and the best ones rise to the top. Hopefully, the ones that contain all of the good aspects of humanity, the things that encourage people to become better, are the ones that are going to be popular. However, I'm quite pessimistic. I think that people are going to try and get a bit more censorious with video games, and they're going to start determining what is acceptable for other people. And I think that so long as a person can consume a piece of art without harming anyone, then it should be fine. Even if that's a theoretical thing, a few bad apples shouldn't spoil the rights of other people to enjoy what they like.
All right. I think we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks for listening to Doha Debates. I'm your host, Karen Given. Doha Debates is a production of Qatar Foundation. Our podcast is produced by FP Studios and Doha Debates. Our producers include Daniel Dazi, Rosie Julian, Claudia Tatey, and Katrine Dermody. Special thanks to James Woolley. FP Studios' Managing Director is Rob Sachs. Our executive producers are Japhet Weeks, Amjad Atala, and Jigar Mehta. To learn more about Doha Debates, please head to dohadebates.com, where you can find out more about our podcasts, short films, upcoming events, and more. And please, if you like our podcast, follow and share your reviews. Thanks for listening.